This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Wrestling, Indies, and International. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, what's going on, man?
Oh, I got the PWG flu. I've been sick. I went into work Monday morning. It was funny, because it took a while. I didn't notice anything until late Sunday night, actually recording my other podcast with Adrian. And I think drinking some beers just exacerbated, because that can't fuck with your immune system. And I think that opened the door for me to get sick. Monday morning, I go into work, and I'm in early, so I couldn't, I felt like if I called out, I'd kind of leave them stranded, not having someone to cover the early shift for opening. So I go in, and I couldn't even get through the day. It was exacerbated by the annoyance of my coworkers, made it to the point where I just couldn't stand it anymore, and I just had to get out of there. And then I took a day off, which is crazy for me. I almost never take days off of work, so I actually called out sick Tuesday. I've been going to work every day sick since then, but yeah, man, just been feeling kind of out of it in general. Pete, how have you been for the past week?
Doing pretty good. I had tickets to two shows. I ended up going to part of the Wrestle Circus show, and then something came up and I didn't go to the Inspire show, but I watched it, and man, they both put on really good shows. I thought they were both their best shows they've ever put on. I'm at least top three, and a lot of it was but keeping it under in time. Like, the Wrestle Circus show was under 4 hours. I think it went 3.5 hours.
That's impressive for them.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a great show. I mean, let me run it down real quick. I mean, JT Dunn opened up versus Shane Taylor, and that's a match that I don't think we've seen, and it was a good hard-hitting match. And it looks like Taylor's lost some weight. I felt like it was in the 3.5-star range. Really good stuff. Then we had Teddy Hart versus Andrew Everett versus Zachary Wentz versus Myron Reed. And they had a nice little spot-festy match, probably in the 3-3.25 range.
What did you think of Zachary Wentz live? Because I just saw him live for the first time after having been a fan of him, like I talked about in PWG, and I think he's insanely improved, especially live. I mean, all of his stuff looks, to me, looked very snappy and crisp. What did you think?
Yeah, but it's hard to tell in a four-way because it was a spot fest.
Right.
So it wasn't like a pro, you know, what I'm not saying a high pro, it wasn't like it was a low profile match, but it was like, you know, it's hard to focus as on a four-way when there's you're looking at three other guys, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely see that.
So I can't really say give him a fair thing. I mean, he didn't. I thought all four of the guys looked good and stuff. So, and honestly, I thought Teddy Hart might have looked the best out of them all in the spots that really allowed him to shine. But I thought everyone looked good in the match. And Myron Reed is a pretty special kid. Then we got Jervis and Kylie Rae versus Leva Bates as, I think, like Jake the Snake and Serpentico. You know, it was better than most Jervis matches. And I like it that we only had one comedy match and they didn't drag. Like, sometimes, like, you know, when you have like a Joey Ryan on the card, you can be into it. You know, you've been on plenty of shows where Joey Ryan's on the card. Seems like that bastard gets like 25 fucking minutes with entrances a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah, with everything all together, his matches do tend to eat up a lot of time. I mean, I guess I'll give it to him. Luckily, he does break it up with, like you said, entrances and other stuff to where it doesn't feel like one long kind of the same thing for the segment, but it is a lot of time eaten up by him.
Yeah, I mean, I remember him at Inspire a couple of shows ago, and it felt like he was out there for 5 hours long, his segment. It was just like, ugh. And it's just ruined the card for me. He wasn't on this card. I'm just using it as an example here. They didn't overstay their welcome. It was fine. If you're into these guys' act, and if you're not, they gave you enough. So if you like these guys, then cool. If not, then it wasn't too offensive. Then we got Rey Fénix and Desmond Xavier. And, you know, I was really going to skip the Wrestle Circus card, but then when the workers messaged me, like, man, are you coming? I'm like, yeah. At that point, you kind of feel obligated. They know you have a ticket. And then Rey Fénix and Desmond Xavier really had a hell of a spot fest, about in the 3 and 3/4-star range. I've never been one of those guys. Like, people threw in money, and that's great for the workers. I'm all for it. But, man, I think that's just so markish for people just to throw money into the ring, because these guys are getting paid already, and they got paid by a fucking gimmick. I think the fans do it to try to get themselves over as great fans, as opposed to they were so, especially, I mean, the match was good, don't get me wrong, but this wasn't like some classic 5-star, epic match. It was a really good, fun sprint, high spot. And they did a lot of difficult stuff, but man, yeah, I mean, the fact that the people are throwing money in the ring, I sometimes find it eye-rolling. I don't know. What about you? What do you think about this throwing money in the ring at wrestling?
It happened at the last PWG show, too. It was for the Lucha Tag with Zachary Wentz, actually. And I agree. I think that it, in some ways, it is a very self-serving kind of thing. I think the first time it happened in PWG for the All Lucha Tag Match from the Bola from, God, probably 3 or 4 years ago at this point, which feels crazy. It felt more, I don't want to say organic because it wasn't completely organic, but there was a contingency of people who were there who are specifically Lucha Libre fans, people who came from Mexico. There was a carload of luchadors who came from Mexico directly. The match was all luchadors. And it felt a little bit more fitting, but then it does. I do think that it's now getting to the point where it's definitely like a, oh, look how cool we are. We're doing this. I mean, Desmond Xavier and Zachary Wentz are not luchadors, so
right.
Doing it for their match, it's not the cultural thing it's not the same cultural thing. It became a thing in PWG with the Lucha Brothers because of them. They were in the first match where it happened,
right?
And then they were kind of loved in PWG, and it became like a thing for them specifically. I think if it's not something that you really believe is like one of the greatest matches of all time or something really important, then it shouldn't be happening. And you should really hold it to that standard to be doing it. And I think you're right. I think that people just want to feel like they're part of something epic and memorable and historical, and you're not. And you do come across a little disingenuous when you're throwing that money for a match that you know is not like an all-time legendary match.
Yeah, you guys went 12 minutes. It was just a spot fest, and it was a good spot fest. I mean, it was really good work too, well, in that style. But yeah, like, I remember Rey Fénix tore it down maybe 6-8 months ago at a Wrestle Circus show. I'm not a guy throwing money in the fucking ring. And two, I went and bought his fucking mask from him, okay? That's my way of saying thanks. And you're not being obligated to do that, because they're getting paid by the promoter, and you're hoping they're going to work their asses off for him. But I mean, I get it. I just wish it felt a little bit more genuine, is what it just comes across as fans trying to get over as great fans. And I think you just look like a mark to me.
At least it costs them more money than just chanting "This is awesome." So
yeah,
it's kind of
true.
At least
I'd rather
them
throw
punished.
Money and then "This is awesome" chants or "Fight Forever" or any of the other fucking just lame-ass fucking sayings.
Yeah, for me, I think at least that's at least somewhat painful to their pocketbook for their stupid kind of markdom. So
yeah.
Chanting "Fight Forever" or "This is awesome," they get to do that for free, so I dislike that even more.
And the odds are they're the same group of fans.
Exactly.
So, and then we got Extra Talented versus the Dirty Devils. This was a solid tag, but there's like some miscommunication problems here and there. Gregory James isn't on the level of the other three workers. He's a guy who's hit or miss. I've seen him look really well, good, and I've seen him look mediocre. And lately it seems like he hasn't evolved. It's like he's hit a plateau here in Texas, and he hasn't really gone past it. So we'll see where he goes from here. But they're the new tag champs, the Dirty Devils, which is Greggy James and Andy Dalton. Then we got Masada versus Jordan Lennox, another like 2-star match. They grappled a little bit, but you know, it was all leading up to Masada stabbing the shit out of Jordan to try to give Jordan some, like, you know, tough guy cred. Yeah, it's not going to work. Then we got Tessa Blanchard versus Chelsea Green, which was a hell of a match. 3.5 stars. Both girls worked hard, and they worked hard to get the response they wanted. Because the crowd was definitely pro-Tessa, but she switched it up and worked heel and got that crowd, not booing her, but got them to cheer Chelsea Green. And they built a lot of spots that made Chelsea look really good. One of the better Chelsea performances I've ever seen. And then in the main event, we got Strickland versus Penta, Pentagon Jr., or Penta L0, is it now? What's he fucking called?
Penta L0 MA or whatever. I'm just going to call him Pentagon forever. I don't care.
Yeah, I know. I get goddamn confused. And these guys tore it up, man. 4 stars. I think this is the best match on the show. Yeah, Penta used a lot of chair shots, but, man, they did it in a smart way where Penta was working. Right off the bat, he did the break the arm spot on Strickland. And Strickland sold that arm all well, real well, and did a bunch of bumps on it. And Penta used the chair shots that he used and hit that shoulder and arm. So it all made sense. It was really smartly worked. And that's something that Strickland's really becoming. He feels like he's really in the last, especially I thought last year he was developing and he was working hard, but now it seems like he's, like a few years ago, he just seemed like a spot, like a kid who did a lot of spots. Now he's like a, you know, he's kind of grown up. He's a man. He carries himself like a man. He has charisma and he's working smarter as opposed to harder now. And he's still working hard. Don't get me wrong, but he's adding a lot more psychology to his matches. And he's a guy people should check out more, see him evolving, because he's using a lot more mat work to complement his high flying. It makes his spots stand out more. And him and Penta had a hell of a match, man. I can't put it over enough.
He's definitely a guy who I think he benefits your cards if you're booking him long term, though.
Yeah.
Like, he's a great top of the card guy. I think he's a good challenger. He's a guy you can build and work with. He's a good champion. But he's not a guy who I think has that buzz that can pop a house if you just bring him in for dream matches. He's really not.
No, he's not. You're right.
And I think that's what the problem is that when he was doing the, you know, dollar store Ricochet gimmick and being just like a spot guy, he didn't stand out in any way. And now that he has developed and has his own standout, he actually is someone who should be getting used and seen here and there, but he doesn't have that same kind of curbside appeal. He's a guy that you have to... I think you have to dig in to really appreciate him.
And I think part of it's because he's been so exposed.
That's true, too, yeah.
It's hard to rewrite the book on yourself, because, like, Gargano's done it for me. But that's because he went to NXT, you know, on a bigger stage type of thing. I think Strickland reminds me of the same. He reminds me of Gargano a lot in that he's picked up psychology a lot better now. But I think for a lot of the average people, they just remember Shane Strickland's spot guy, you know?
Yeah, that's true, and a lot of people have probably gotten a bad taste in their mouth from him. He's also got a little bit of an unfortunately negative reputation with the stuff that happened in WXW, and then you connect that also to being a Sami Callihan CZW guy.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, he does have a little bit of baggage with that too. Plus, a lot of people have probably seen him when he was doing, like I said, the kind of knockoff Ricochet thing. To where, yeah, I can definitely see why places aren't going to bring him back. But especially, as I said, a guy that's going to have to be an investment and not a guy that you could just bring in to pop a house and get a bunch of attention on, you know?
Yeah, the guy's worked Wrestle Circus a lot, and he's been his most consistent best worker in the company. It was either him or Sammy Guevara every week. I mean, they're throwing a great match out there. I mean, I bet you Strickland, you know, on this one, I thought he had the best match on the show. I think he probably has 6 of the best 9 matches probably in Wrestle Circus history. So the dude is definitely performing for Wrestle Circus, I can tell you that. And even some of the ones that have been misses, he's tried something different, and I blame more of the fans not reacting to the match than what he was trying to do, because and stuff. But another thing, you know, maybe he might get more, would have got more buzz if he didn't work under a hood in Lucha Underground either, too, you know.
Yeah, and he's another guy like we talked about before with Jeff Cobb, where that Lucha Underground buzz doesn't affect him as well because of the mask and the separate gimmicks thing, to where he doesn't have that same continuity from being a Lucha Underground guy to being an indie guy, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, it sounds like he's not going to be a Lucha Underground guy much longer, Cobb. I guess you'll, I don't know if you heard, he lost a death match, so he died on camera.
Yeah, I mean, good for him, honestly. Yeah. I know that I've heard a lot of stuff about him not wanting to be there. He's an easy fit into the Los Angeles dojo for the New Japan or whatever calling it now. I mean,
yeah,
he's Santa Monica Dojo, whatever they're calling it. Yeah, he's a easy fit in that scene. So hopefully this means more New Japan bookings for Jeff Cobb.
Yeah, but then I watched the Inspire show, and that rocked, was really good too, man. One of their best, one of their best. Yeah, John Davidson versus Ricky Starks opened the show. Good solid 3-star match. They, you know, Davidson stuff looks good. Starks is a good seller, so they really had a good match. Then we got the New Movement and versus Cody Lane, Andy Dalton, and Masada, and this thing was one hellacious brawl. I mean, it was pretty a little one sided. This is the match that Rex was supposed to be in, but he ended up being sick. So now I'm glad I didn't really go, because I really wanted to see Rex again live. But I thought he would have brought a different element to this match. But my God, this was just hellacious, wild brawl all over the place. Weapon shots, brawling in the freaking seats. At one point, Cody Lane grabbed a kid and was using the kid's foot, was like hitting his opponents with it. It was a great spot. I mean, the kid was eating it up. It was awesome. Then we got Gino versus Ethan Price. I thought this was really well worked. I got 2 3/4 range, and Price is a guy they've been building up in Inspire. And it really, he got the payoff, he got the win here, and a surprise, and it just really elevated him, and the crowd's really behind Price as that lovable loser type of guy who gives you 100%. Then we got Terrell Tempo versus Jordan Lennox. Yeah, it was just there. It's just 2 stars, just kind of blah. Then we got Palmer versus Massive. I thought this was pretty funny. They were talking about how Palmer was going to sensitivity classes, and it was revealed that he was anti-Mexican, so that's where the fight and Massive, the reason he attacked Palmer was because he was disrespecting Mexicans, and Palmer comes out to his song, and he's throwing tortillas out to the crowd after his manager said how he's gone to all these sensitivity classes, and he's coming out to apologize, and he came out to like the merengue, and he's throwing tortillas to the crowd. I ate it up. I thought it was great. And we need more stuff like that. And they had an okay match. Nothing great, but it was fun. And then Steve Arena versus Joey Janela tore the fucking house down. Easy 4-star match. These guys were incredible. Janela loved Austin so much, he ended up canceling his flight and staying in Austin till Tuesday to eat barbecue and whatever else he was doing. I think it's just a great Twitter story. And again, it just shows why isn't El Reno touring, going out and working bigger places, you know? He'd fit in on a PWG show. He'd fit in a Sea to City Invitational show. He'd fit in a PWX show. This guy's a guy. This guy would fit in on a Nova Pro show. He could, you know, he can do high spot stuff. He can mat wrestle with like the Freddie Yehais, and not that level, but he can work so many different styles. It's like it's a shame. And if you guys haven't really seen a whole lot of Steve Areno, check out his Inspire Pro work. On Powerbomb TV, they just uploaded, I think it was from 2016 on ACW show, where him and Curt Stallion do a last man standing match, which I thought was awesome. So you guys should check that one out. You get an idea of who I'm talking about. The dude, if he toured like Stallion was doing, he'd be Curt Stallion in this time and frame. I mean, you've seen enough of him. What do you think about Areno? I mean, I know. Yeah,
same page as you. Oh, go ahead.
Damn good guy, right? Damn good hard worker. I mean, some of the spots here was insane, I'll tell you.
Good. He's a good utility guy who can work. Not utility guy, but he's a good guy who can work in a lot of different places.
But utility is a fair term, because he could work tags, he could work brawls, he could work spot fests, he could do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I just think that term gets a negative connotation for someone who's not super skilled, and I think he actually is pretty skilled at everything. I think he's a guy who can fit a lot of roles. I think he can definitely carry your company on the top, which is also interesting for a guy like him. I think that we've seen him in the feuds in Inspire as their kind of de facto top guy. He was very good, so yeah I think. He's a guy who has a lot of talent and wouldn't feel uncomfortable in a lot of different places, like you said, all those different settings. I think he'd be fine in. And I mean, hey, with the new PWG lineups that are being announced for the All-Star Weekend coming up, I mean, yeah, he wouldn't seem out of place with the kind of people that they're bringing in now, which is nice. I mean, it's funny to me, just a few months back, I mean, not even a year, I think we talked about it even on the show. I knew people who were regulars at PWG who said Sammy Guevara, oh, he's not ready to be in PWG yet. And then he debuts right after that, and he becomes those same people saying that. They're his favorite guy. Oh, I love Sammy Guevara. He's great. And it's just, I mean, I think that some people have a weird idea of what PWG is. And I think that, like Steve Areno, he fits right in. I think a lot of the guys in the Texas scene fit right in PWG, honestly.
Yeah, I think that's a good comment. Then we got Thunder Rosa versus Kylie Rae, and these girls beat the tar out of each other. Good 3.25 star. Fought around ringside. Fought in the ring. Some brawling. Some mat work. Some comedy. They did it all. It was a really, really, really. Thunder Rosa's really impressed me a lot. If you want to see more Kylie Rae, man, buy a ticket to the Making Towns Classic in May. Contact Papa Hales. You can see her live in the tournament. Thunder Rosa. I didn't like her as Cobra Moon, but I love her as Thunder Rosa. The last couple of live experiences I've seen, which was here, I saw her, and at Aero Lucha, I thought she was fantastic. So I'm leaning with thumbs up on Thunder Rosa right now. And then the main event was ACH versus Davey Vega versus Zach Taylor, and this has worked how it needed to be. Zach Taylor was ACH's protege, and they just beat the shit out of him, but highlighted him enough to make him look good and competent, and like he'd possibly win and almost pull off the upset, and that's what they did. And had a good 3.5 star main event. I mean, up and down the card, just good, solid wrestling. Another just great, strong Inspire Pro show. And sounds like Joey Janela is going to be coming back sooner than later. Sounds like he loved the place, loved working there. So good. Now let's move over to like what's going around, man. I mean, I'm sure you've heard about all the Louisiana rules and stuff, huh? For Mania.
Yeah. I've heard about this. Everything that's banned and everything that's not allowed anymore, or not going to be allowed for the weekend. And I saw someone, on Twitter, and I don't know who the fuck it is. And I'm not trying to do the patented Joe Lanza straw man argument where I'm making something up that I didn't actually see for sake of argument. But I did see someone mention that this happened last time that they did WrestleMania for Louisiana WrestleMania 30, and I don't recall that at all. Do you remember a similar thing happening last time?
No, I don't. But then again, Twitter wasn't as prevalent, so you're pretty much relying on the message boards by that point. You know, that was I mean, that was what, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, six?
It was probably 4 years ago at the most, honestly.
Okay. So, you know, Twitter really wasn't, wrestling Twitter wasn't the thing it was, or was it, and I just wasn't part of it.
Right. I mean, I was on wrestling Twitter pretty much at that time, and I don't remember anything. But I also, like, I saw that WrestleMania was a weird one for me, because I was somewhat, I think, newly getting into, like, the wrestling fandom scene here in Los Angeles. That was during the time when I was like you know, the kind of comedians and people who are known in LA for watching wrestling somewhat, and they do, like, do comedy shows with X-Pac and stuff, and Dolph Ziggler. I was kind of dipping my toe in interacting with those people, and so maybe it just wasn't as big of a thing in my immediate circles at the time, but I don't remember that, like, even slightly, honestly.
And this is very true. Maybe it's just now, again, with the shows just being blown up and becoming a big deal.
Right. That could be part of it. But, yeah.
I think it was still kind of in its infancy back then, where it wasn't the thing, and now maybe it is.
Yeah, that could be part of it. But, yeah, I mean, they're saying no pile drivers, but people keep bringing up Canadian Destroyer. Is that a pile driver or not? And a lot of different stuff, so...
To me, it's like, good. I don't need to see a fucking Canadian Destroyer all weekend long. I'll be happy. Saw plenty of them last Mania weekend. Saw plenty of Cutters. You know, for the guys who are complaining about what stuff they can't do, fucking learn to work then. You know what? Zack Sabre Jr. ain't going to be fucking worrying about doing no Canadian Destroyer. You know why? He doesn't need to do it to get over.
Although, I think last WrestleMania he was in a match with the Canadian Destroyer, I believe, with
Well, there you go, but that still doesn't, you know, Kane Justice doesn't need a damn do a Canadian Destroyer to get over. You know, work, learn to work, grab a hold, grab an arm, grab a leg, okay?
Ricky Steamboat
never did a Canadian Destroyer his whole entire life, and he got over as one of the greatest workers of all time. I don't feel bad for these wrestlers at all. So what? So what, you can't do a fucking pile driver? Get over it. You know what? Then don't work a match where you're working the neck. Work the arm, okay? So right. Then you don't think, you do arm knee bars and work in the arm. Stuff spots around the arm. Don't work around spots around somebody's neck then.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know if you saw. Did you see young Will Ospreay there? His special edition shirt for the weekend.
No, I didn't. I saw. I didn't know. Click on it. What did it say?
It just says something about I don't even know. Coming, like, going out on top, not caring or whatever. Has, like, don't give a fuck degaff on it. Talking about Louisiana, that he's gonna essentially talking about that he's gonna break all the rules and all this stuff.
Oh, I thought he was talking about his lack of selling. Doesn't give a fuck. Okay.
Yeah, right. That should
maybe
be
focus more on your selling instead of creative t-shirts. Maybe you'd be better at your craft.
Hey,
maybe
I mean,
master your craft.
Hey, I mean, he's doing something. I don't know. I mean, the guy is, like I said, I've been hearing the takes from other people about PWG weekend that I just went to, and I'm hearing people talk about that match against Brooks, like it was the best match on the show, and I'm just like, I'm hearing people giving takes that are the exact opposite of my takes from that show, and I'm just like, were we at the same fucking show? Will Ospreay is one of the best guys on there. I'm like, I didn't see it at all. I mean, he's a troll. He's, you know, maybe he's smart for making money on these shirts and stuff. I don't even know if he's actually smart enough to be a troll. I hate to even say that, but, you know, I can't say for sure what he's thinking, but I almost feel like the shit is just too ridiculous to not be that's what he really thinks or sees the world as. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Are they saying no blood? They're saying everyone has to be clean shaven. There's like a lot of interesting rules for what's allowed and what's not allowed for WrestleMania weekend. But like you said, and I think what all of the wrestlers essentially need to understand is, like, you can still have good wrestling matches with literally none of that stuff.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, but Terry Funk is still having Dory Funk is still able to have a decent wrestling match in his 70s, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that you all need to be able to do every flip in the fucking world to have a good wrestling match.
Nope, I agree. I mean, it'd be interesting to see who really are the true good, really great workers out on the indie scene who don't need to rely on the fucking cheap pops of a fucking big no selling. At least we don't have to see the fucking no sell pile driver spots. I mean, good.
Right.
I mean, that might help your fucking match psychology, your storytelling, because no story should be people popping up on pile driver spots. So good. Good riddance.
Well, I'm trying to think. I'm trying to remember what were the big matches from the indies that year. And I'm almost thinking, like, that was around the time when Hero was, like, the guy for the WrestleMania weekend. Which I think this year it's probably going to be Sabre. Like if it is, if people are reined in because of the commission and they have to tone down what they're doing, I think it's almost going to be impossible for Zack Sabre Jr. to not be the person who stands out the most coming out of that weekend, honestly.
Because he doesn't rely on any of that fucking chicanery. This is all about working limbs and fucking destroying arms and taking punishment. I don't see it hurting Walter at all either.
That's true. All Walter has to do is chop the fuck out of someone, and he'll be over. He'll be over the moon, honestly.
Yeah, I just find it funny how some of the guys are whining on Twitter about all the stuff they can't do. Focus on the stuff that you can do and build your fucking matches around stuff you can incorporate that shit with, and then just use fucking good psychology and work. Okay, that's what it is work. And the commission has you by the balls, then fucking work. Grab a hold, baby, and don't let go, okay? Oh, my God. Have you decided what shows you're going to watch for Mania Weekend yet, live or anything?
Oh, I mean, live is always a crapshoot for me. It's going to really depend on what I'm up to at the time. But, of course, I'm going to check out Bloodsport. Of course, I'm going to check out Janela's... Spring break. The TNA versus Lucha Underground show sounds interesting.
We're not doing that.
There's some stuff on it that I might want to check out, though.
I'm not shitting on the show. I'm just saying we decided not to go, though.
Yeah, I can't blame you. I honestly 100% cannot blame you in any way for not committing to going to that, because I mean, how can you? Honestly.
Yeah. I think we're running against NXT anyway, and I think we have NXT tickets, but okay. I'm not sure. There was something I was running against, I'm sure, because, I mean, I think we have 9 shows in 3 days we're going to.
Okay. Yeah. So, those are kind of, for me, those are the ones that have been standing out as the ones that I'm definitely going to check out before all is said and done.
Because I don't know about you, I've never been a hot dog guy at the fucking show. I can't stand that. Yeah, I'd rather burn an hour and go eat somewhere, like anything, but eating fucking...
Yeah. I'm not gonna eat at the show.
Yeah, fuck that.
No, I don't eat at the shows. I kind of like to keep that separate as much as possible. I eat my food.
Yeah.
I eat my food at a restaurant for the most
part. And I have no reason to overpay for a damn hot dog, $5 hot dog or whatever.
That's another part of it, too. Yeah, that's a big part of why I don't drink at shows anymore. I mean... You know, I won't say like a beer snob, but a little bit of a beer, like I'd rather drink good beer. And at the shows, you're getting okay to bad beer for insane prices. It's just never worth it to me anymore.
Right. So, Anything else you want to talk about before we move on?
No, I mean, that's it for me, really. Go ahead and move forward into the...
Right. I'll just throw the plug out here right now. If anyone's interested in attending the Place to Be a Nation... And pre-mania party, I guess, over at Cajun's Bar, karaoke bar. Hit me up on Twitter. I'll send you all the information links, and you can join us. It's going to be fun, open for people who are on the crew and for fans alike and stuff. It's an interactive thing. You can meet some of the on-air personalities. Hear some of them sing terribly. I'm not a karaoke guy, but I'm sure if you want, you can pop over, pop a beer or drink or shot with me, maybe have a cigar, you never know. But hey, let's move over to CWF Worldwide, which of course you can see on Twitch and on of course, YouTube the following day. And this was, again, part of the, still at the high school. I think that's where they're having it at the gym. I thought it was a pretty solid show overall. What about you?
Yeah, I enjoyed this show quite a bit. Looking over the card, the way it was live in the building here, they definitely chopped this up in probably a very smart way, but a really interesting way on what matches they put on what shows. I enjoyed this one particularly quite a bit. I think that this was a lot better balanced than the first Chapel Hill episode of TV.
Yeah, you know, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I will agree with that.
Which is also interesting with this one having the Trevor Lee match, because a lot of times you would expect that to be kind of the top of the tops of the show. So that would be the pinnacle of the work weight. But then on this show, like I said, it actually produced the more balanced show overall, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. And it opens up with Biggs. You know, before I even go on to that, I want to say I really think Cecil and Smith Garrett are really beginning to gel as a commentating team, where they're not only just they're calling it, but they seem like they're having fun in the booth now, you know?
Yeah, and you know what? I'm happy that you brought that up, because it's not a counterpoint, but it's a really nice companion point to something that was really important that I was going to bring up probably later on in the review. But Cecil is instantly becoming my favorite kind of play-by-play guy. I mean, he is just so good. Like you said, him and Smith are great. I think they could tone down the jokey a little bit, but I think that there was one joke in here that I liked quite a bit, and it was like, I love it because it was dirty while staying clean, and it was nice for me, but I think it wouldn't like get anybody too upset. So yeah, it was like, I think that they could, there's some of it that they could drop, but then when you have stuff like that, that I really, really enjoyed, I think that it does kind of make me go like, well, it's worth it to kind of have that looseness in the way that they're doing the commentary so that they can produce the stuff that I enjoy. But yeah, I mean, Cecil with his ability now playing the play-by-play guy, he's doing a really good job of, he's not kind of doing the, oh, look at how smart I am, I'm exposing the business kind of thing, but he is doing the, let me point out some holes that are a little bit too glaring to not be said. So he's not doing the, I turn a blind eye to everything because wrestling is fake, which I fucking hate, but he's not doing the Matt Stryker, oh, let me make a joke of this whole thing by kind of pointing out logic holes and stuff that's like kind of ruins the magic. He's got the perfect balance, and I really appreciate that from Cecil. We already really like Cecil as a color guy with Brad, but I think that he's developing into a really good play-by-play guy.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And like, yeah, an example of what you were saying would be in the Cool J match, he totally botches a spot, right? And you could either A, pretend it didn't happen, B, try to cover it, but it was so bad you couldn't cover it. They just said, yeah, he's a rookie, he slipped.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, and in the same match, I mean, we might as well, because I think it's opening match, we might as well get into the Cool J match kind of break.
No, it was actually the third match.
Oh, but, was it really? Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, in the same... Hey, well, oh, go ahead. Let's get to it then.
Yeah, let's get into it. We had Aaron Biggs and Kevin Mack versus John Skyler and Mace Lee. This is giving us another tag partner to Biggs, who, I mean, you know how I said where they shouldn't even give him any partners. Now they've run like a, almost have him on a whole Survivor Series team here. I'm beginning to think, I mean, on paper, if I'm giving him all these different tag partners, it feels like they're trying to build to Biggs and maybe Mecca coming back at the Canoodle Cup. Right. I haven't heard anything like this. I have no idea if Mecca and them have made amends behind the scenes. But the way they're booking Biggs with so many different partners, you'd think the payoff might be him and Mecca together at the end. What, you think I'm insane?
No, I agree with you completely. Like, the storyline here makes sense for that to be it. I mean, he's having matches where he looks good. He's getting wins. He got the win here even. But he's not anywhere near the same level of entertaining or dominant as he was with Mecca. And it does, we talked about it, it forces that comparison. And it almost, now at this point, you go this long, it almost comes across either that you're just being completely bullheaded, that you're going to like power through the idea of comparing them, or like you said, that it is playing into a bigger narrative in the end where Mecca's going to come back and then it's going to feel right. Because that's, like I said, that's what's missing, is this doesn't feel right. Even if it feels like they're good, it doesn't feel the same, and it doesn't feel anywhere near the same with it not being Mecca. So, yeah, I don't think you're crazy at all. I think that makes perfect sense, honestly.
I thought the heels are really fun stooging here for the faces. Like, I thought Skyler really was the glue here. You can see how good he is when he's in the ring with, like, Mace Lee and Kevin Mack, where he's just, like, directing traffic the whole entire way and being a complete ring general. Really good here. Then we get to see up the Heat, and I thought this is Biggs and Skyler looking good, and Mace Lee and Kevin Mack has some charisma. Mace Lee, I think, has a long way to go. From I don't know what it is. It just seems like he just seems real basic, and his reactions are a little like kind of just there. Where there's something there, I just can't put my finger on it. There's something about him that I think could be productive, but it's not transpiring. Maybe he's just being overshadowed by the great workers that are in the All-Stars, and that doesn't help. I mean, it's not helping getting the rub because he's the one always doing the job for the All-Stars too. So I don't know. But it was a good, solid tag overall. What you make of it, man?
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you there. Skyler was a guy that I think during his long PWX title run, I didn't appreciate him as much there as I do now. And you talked about the ring generalship that he has here. I mean, the guy has just got a great presence, not just in the sense that he exudes an aura of being an ass kicker, tough guy in the match, but also presence in the presence of mind in the match. He's very thoughtful, and as you talked about, ring generalship of the entire match. I mean, being able to keep everyone feeling like they're in the right place, making sure that everything runs smoothly with multiple people. And I think that's the thing that didn't show through as much in his singles championship run in PWX was why I thought that he was kind of overblown by a lot of people at that time. And then now I'm starting to see is that he's much better in multi-man matches, specifically tag matches, honestly. But not that he's much better, but that part of where he's really kind of almost a transcendent level worker shows through a lot more there. Because when it's just you and one other guy, I mean, even if you're very good, which he is, it doesn't show that next level ability to keep the structure and the psychology of a match together that he has in multi-man matches. I mean, he's a guy who probably, and I hate to, think about exit strategies because I think he deserves to have a good career on his own merit, but he's a guy who very clearly to me should be someone that they're looking at as a producer down the line for someone who's putting together matches, because his brain for wrestling, this what works and moment to moment and where people should be is just super on point, and I really, really appreciate watching that side of him. I mean, he's a guy who I think I'd love to see him get that chance to do almost one of those run the gambit kind of matches where he does like a Royal Rumble from start to finish. You know, not like doesn't have to be WWE Royal Rumble, but if they put him in like a CWF Rumble and he's number one and he goes all the way to the end, much like Trevor did recently, I think that he would be able to shine super well just like Trevor did in that same kind of environment, because I think he's got a similar style to the way that he can wrestle. Yeah, good. I mean, good stuff all around. I think I will let that be my entire review, is just me kind of going off on how much I love John Skyler, because I've kind of seen the light, because there was a point there where I did not like Skyler that much. And now I really think that he is fantastic. Another just quick shout for Cecil here is that I loved, because it does play into kind of the overall narrative, I loved Cecil pointing out that Skyler is kind of that All-Stars alternate, or he's like a All-Stars, will call him in as a heater, he's on the speed dial, he's an affiliate, he's not necessarily a member, but they can always count on him, and they bring him in. I wish that, I don't know if he did say it for sure, I hope he did, to talk about that he definitely comes in on high dollar, he doesn't come in for cheap for the All-Stars, but I did love that, because it does give him some credibility, and it plays into storylines that I think you can develop through within the company as well.
Yeah, the one line, that's the one thing, the one line Cecil messed up, where he referred to Skyler as a designated hitter when it should be pinch hitter.
Right, right.
Nothing major, but as a baseball guy, he's like, okay, you got it wrong.
Yeah.
What do you think of Chet Sterling and Otto Swans?
Loved Otto coming out with the chains and all the commentary saying Otto as much as possible. I'm a big fan of Otto Swans as well. I think that as a monster kind of wrestling machine character, he is fantastic. He's got a very nice, impressive kind of physical charisma and aura around him as well. He's a guy who, he can work that bear hug and make it believable. Chet obviously sells his ass off. I mean, there's some bumps in here that Chet takes that are almost downright nutty. I mean, the shoulder block into the corner, I think, is the one that stands out the most. Otto gives the shoulder block, and Chet bumps all the way to the floor from a shoulder block in the corner. That was just crazy. And I love Cecil putting that over again. Cecil made it bigger than it was, but it was already big. You could even see the look on Otto's face that he was, like, impressed that Chet would take such a crazy bump for just a regular spot, which I loved. And then the finish, I mean, the Chet getting the out-of-nowhere finish, out of the corner, roll up. And, I mean, I have to give big-time thumbs up to Chet on this, too. This is a little detail that I thought was fantastic, is Chet is so out of it, so out of sorts. He got the win, but he stumbles through back out through the stage, through the side, on, like, where you're not supposed to walk through instead of going through the center, because he's just so, like, beat up and shocked that he won and just trying to get the fuck out of there. And it was just a great little detail that I was like, that's perfect. That's real. That's what you would do. Like, you would sneak through the side. You just get the fuck out of there. You're not worried about going through the front. And I just, that, even that little bit post-match, I thought was a great thing from Chet. Like, Chet has got a really good babyface kind of connection. I talk about it with the fans, the way that he sells, the way that he bumps, the way that he throws himself around. But that little bit for me was also a big thing, too, because it just felt real. And it, like, kind of, it got to the core of the situation in a way that was believable.
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of talk over on Segunda Caída that they refer to Chet as like the Randy Orton, where they just, whatever he does, it's just there, and he's kind of hit his peak. I don't see that at all. I'm always excited when I see Chet. I always expect something interesting, and I always think he has great psychology, and I thought I saw it here. Otto, I'm all in on Otto acting weirder than ever, than usual here. And if you want, he can be as weird as he wants to be. I like that. He's their Mark Lewin. If I had Otto walking at me down the street in a dark alley, I'd turn and walk the other way. I would not want to make eye contact with the guy. The dude is weird.
Hey, you're a bigger man than me, because I wouldn't walk the other way. I would be running.
There we go. I like Swans using his size early to kind of muscle Chet around. I really enjoyed that. You see Chet go to the arm early, then he gets cut off, and you see him go out to the leg, and then you see Swan just using his size and using some unique offense to settle Chet down, and then, you know, we go to the finish and the bumps. But yeah, they laid out a really good match, man. That was a good legit 3-star match. Good stuff from both guys. And I'm an Otto Swans guy and a Chet Sterling guy, so I was really excited to see this.
I don't want to, call out their wrath or anything, but like, there was some stuff. I don't want to say that like they're intentionally being just like, kind of like trying to just go for the altar and just be like counterpoint just to do it. But there is some takes from Segunda Caída sometimes that I don't know what reality they're based in. Like, and I hate to even treat any place like it's a monolith. And I know that Segunda Caída is not just one person. There's multiple people. But there is some stuff there. Like, the Chet Sterling take that you just mentioned, just for me, it's just, I don't know. Like, I really don't know what you're watching if you see it that way. It's like, I feel like you're grasping at an analogy just because, like, the big monolith in wrestling is WWE, so you're looking for someone to compare him to. And I can definitely see the comparison to Randy Orton. I've talked about it on here that he kind of is, if you said Trevor Lee was the John Cena of CWF, then I could definitely see the argument that the Randy Orton of CWF is Chet, because he's kind of the number two to the clear number one big star. But I don't see the comparison in like the idea that the work that he's bringing is not inspired, and you know, and like that feels like you're taking that analogy a little bit too far.
Yeah, I've known Phil Schneider a long time, and he's a guy where we'll see eye to eye on a lot of stuff, and then we'll see stuff completely different. And I think Chet's one of those things where we see it completely different. I'll tell you that. Which is funny because they've seen Kane the same way we do. So it's like one of those odd things that we're just, there's definitely a disconnect there. And that leads us to the Dawson's promo, which I thought was pretty damn awesome. They came across as scary ass kickers, right?
Yeah, I loved this Dawson's promo. Even Dave Dawson, who I don't think I've thought much of for his charisma wise in ring, I thought he was great here on the promo.
Yeah. Agreed. and it's Dawson's versus Cool J and Dirty Daddy. And the Cool J Dirty Daddy team is a nice little plucky underdog team. I liked the Shine. I liked how the Dawson's sneak attack, but they make the comeback real quick, and the baby faces are shining with some goofy shine spots, like the Dawson's bump into each other, and then Dave Dawson falls backwards over Cool J, who's on all fours. I mean, this wasn't classic fare or anything, but it was a lot of fun wrestling, getting to see the Dawson's stooge for these underdog babyface tag team. I liked a lot of it. I liked Cecil Cecil's comment about Cool J's lined up on all four like he's Hacksaw's Jim Duggan in the Mid-South Coliseum, which, you know, Cool J is probably 1/5 the size of Jeff Duggan, which is great. This is fun. There was some slip-ups, some sloppiness, but the match was still fun because you got behind the plucky underdogs, and the Dawson's are good heels, especially coming off that promo. So I thought everything worked within the match. What you get? What's your take?
I liked the match. It's hard for me not to think about that kind of semi-shooty promo from Dirty Daddy talking about the ideas that he had for himself, and one of which was the tag team ace or thing where you give him random partners. And then it was hard for me not to think about this as a random partner that he was stuck with, and I'm just like, how is this not that storyline, basically? Like, you're kind of almost getting there.
Especially because it's Canoodle Cup season, too, you know?
Right. The Dawsons are clearly being kind of positioned as the tag team Trevor kind of thing here in CWF. They're giving them a lot of time. This match goes about 13 minutes, which is pretty long. I talked about it before that they've been having longer matches in CWF in general, but especially the Dawsons.
This is another match that should have gone 8, you know?
Yeah, the Dawsons were definitely, clearly they're wanting to give them a lot of time, and I don't know. I like the Dawsons, but I don't know that their matches all need to go over, you know, 10 minutes every time.
I think they're pretty limited in what they can do. They can be fun, but not 15 minutes of fun. I think they're a 8 to 12 minute type of team, you know?
Yeah, and the thing about Trevor that works as a champion who has long matches is that he's smaller, he sells his ass off, and he makes you buy into his opponents really well. The Dawsons are not Trevor. They're not the same kind of champion, and they should be dominant. So realistically, on top of saying that they're limited, their matches shouldn't be going longer than 10 minutes because it hurts their character. Their character is not a team that has to go this long to beat Dirty Daddy and Cool J. They should be more dominant. Yeah, so it hurts them in both ways because it does expose the nature of their wrestling acumen, and it also exposes their gimmicks as not being as dominant as they should be. That said, I agree with you that the match is fun, but I don't know if it necessarily helped either team. I think it hurt Cool J, honestly. I hate to say that, but I think that he got exposed throughout this match as not being anywhere near as good as people might think he is. I talked about it before, but he's over because he's small. And people get behind someone small getting beat up by big people.
And taking just nuts or bumps, yeah.
Yeah, but he repeatedly had spots that looked bad, spots that were blown, and stuff that was just
basic
downright...
stuff, yeah.
And stuff that was business exposing. I mean, his satellite head scissor, and you can put that some on the Dawsons, but that got to the point of foolishness, the amount of spins that he was doing. I was just, this is ridiculous. And it just hurt, for me, it hurts the overall presentation of the product to have your big ass kickers team in a match against a guy who does stuff that makes them look foolish. So I liked the all fours trip, the kind of a back spring trip. I thought that was good. If you did that without the other stuff, sure. And I liked him calling out the Hacksaw Jim Duggan on the 3-point stance, sure. But there was some stuff in here where I'm just like, this is ridiculous. I thought that Dirty Daddy looked good. Like I said, I thought the Dawsons looked great, but I thought the Cool J...
He needs to lose some weight.
Dirty Daddy should definitely drop some pounds. He is not at that peak fighting shape that he was. I don't know that he could have as good of a match right now with Kane Justice as he had just a little while ago, because he doesn't look like he's necessarily there in being able to just physically keep up. I get what you're saying there, but he's still entertaining. So yeah, I liked the match, but it also was like there were some major flaws in it that made it upsetting for me. But that said, I mean, I think the Dawsons are a really good team. I think that they're a great dominant tag team to have, having challengers winning a tournament to come at them. But at the same time, they don't look super dominant when they go 13 minutes against these two. Especially coming off a feud again.
Their last big feud was against the Sandwich Squad, who are monsters.
Right. So, yeah, I think that they could be booked a lot more.
And they were going toe-to-toe with monsters, and now they're facing going, you know, giving a lot to these midgets. And yeah. And one of them's Cool Jay, who looked pretty sloppy and green here, and yeah, you're right.
Cecil called it out. He said the guy has been in the business for like a year, and I mean, that's not his fault. Unfortunately, and maybe it's true, maybe like me and you shouldn't be watching and reviewing this show with the eye that we have, because we have like a really sharp critique, and maybe this is a show where a guy who's only been in the business for a year should be able to get better. But realistically, yeah, when he's being put in matches like this with this caliber of talent for the tag team championships, I can't apologize or make excuses for him being this green and looking this bad.
And then that's on the company's onus. They put him in the position to go up, yeah, you know, thinking this is going to help him evolve, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and even the 3-point stance, I like the comment. But you know what? You better not do it, because that's the stupidest spot to do, a 3-point stance against a Dawson who's, you know, outweighs you by 3 times the amount.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I don't even want to. I honestly don't even want to keep going on this, because I feel I don't want to be like mean spirited. I don't want people to think that I'm being mean spirited or anything. But yeah, I did not. I liked this match, but there was just stuff that I thought was a little bit too much for me to muster.
Yeah. It's like a match that would have looked a lot better if they, you know, had good editing. Exactly. I'm not saying edit, but you know, like old ECW would have clipped out some of this stuff. And
this would have made a great music video.
Yeah, exactly. What'd you make of the main with Trevor Lee and Donnie Dollars?
I had like some uncomfortability with the opening. Not even the match, but the opening, Trevor coming out when Donnie was in the middle of his promo with his suspenders and shirt on, which I don't know if maybe Donnie is just always put in positions where he doesn't get to make his big full entrance, or it gets edited off the show. But I was like, why is he wearing the shirt and suspenders? Maybe he does that all the time and we just don't see it.
I thought he was doing an IRS gimmick.
Yeah, it looked like IRS knockoff, but I was like, maybe that's like his thing, is he always does that. We just don't see it on the show very often.
Yeah.
But Trevor came out, interrupting him in the middle.
Grant edits it out because he thinks it looks ridiculous back in the day.
It does look a little bit. I will say, you know, it does look a little low rent to be doing an IRS knockoff gimmick. I'm not going to, you know, I mean.
2017.
It's 2017, and you're doing a knockoff of a guy who was already kind of a second banana to the Million Dollar Man, which is. I'm not saying Ted DiBiase
Maybe the gimmick is that he works at the IRS and it's tax season and he just got off work. I don't know.
Oh, because he's extra busy right now because it's tax season. That makes sense. I could get into that.
But, you know, when we got to scratch the surface to find out what the hell's going on. It's never a good thing.
No. But Trevor comes out when he's in the middle of his thing, and knowing. This is why I wish I didn't know even what I kind of do know about the background of CWF. Like, I like kind of having some feeling of, like, oh, you know, I'm like friends, like being friendly with people who work with the company and stuff. But knowing, like, we all kind of know that Trevor runs his own show and basically can kind of get away with murder in CWF. Him coming out in this way where he's interrupting Donnie Dollars in the middle of his promo and he's like just flat out mugging to the crowd, being like, you guys buying into this guy, whatever he's talking about. It almost makes me go like, did Donnie have like a full promo he was going to cut and Trevor just like legitimately cut him off just because like he can get away with it and be a dick? And it just, I hate to say it because I'm like, in the context of wrestling, it works because as a babyface in the area, he should be cutting him off and he should kind of be playing to the crowd about how this, do you guys buy into this guy, whatever he's talking about. But then in the context of like as a person and thinking like he's being disrespectful to a guy who's been in the company for so long and someone that he should have at least some respect for, maybe, or maybe he didn't, like, you know, and that's on me 100%. Like, I shouldn't even be thinking about that because I should just enjoy the wrestling show the way that it's presented, and the way that it was presented, it worked, and it was good, and it was a good thing for Trevor to cut him off as this kind of, like, schlocky heel is talking about some whatever bullshit about investing your money in IRAs and all this. Like, I don't know about that. I don't know about all that. My pappy kept all of his money in a mason jar buried in the backyard. We don't worry about investing our money in no stocks or bonds. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, like, that works, especially for, like, the, you know, the CWF crowd, the Chapel Hill crowd, as you would assume. Then you get into the match, and I'll be damned if Trevor didn't get me believing that Donnie Dollars was going to win the title here. And that is, again, when I talked about the difference between the Dawsons and Trevor, is why Trevor was my wrestler of the year just, you know, 2 years ago. Why Trevor could probably be my wrestler of the year again this year if he continues to show off this kind of level of skill and gets around as much as I think he deserves to, because he can get you to believe in anyone. Any opponent that he has, he is able to shine them up, while also, in this match especially, he looked very dominant and had super credible offense, which is, it was a nice mix for Trevor, because Trevor doesn't necessarily get to work against guys this size.
When he's bigger, yeah.
Yeah, it made it even more impressive because Trevor got to unleash his offense fully, and you could buy into how great his offense looked while also buying into his opponent because of the way that Trevor sold for him. And a lot of times when Trevor has to work to get over a smaller opponent, he really has to subdue his offense, because if he makes his offense look too good, it will kind of ruin the match. And it, in some ways, like, that meta, being able to pick that apart, makes you appreciate Trevor even more, because you realize how much he does hold back when he's with opponents who can't kind of muster the same level of credibility due to size. So again, like, it's just really impressive how great Trevor is. The arm work throughout, obviously. I mean, we talk about the details of Trevor's work all the time. The guy has great just mix of everything. One thing I thought about is I made some posts on PWO at least a couple times. I've talked about it before. Is like comparing Trevor to Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, Daniel Bryan. Like, Trevor is very similar, but the unfortunate thing is that Trevor needs to get around the world. Like, Cecil did a good job putting over that he's this mix of Japanese and Mexican and British and American style all in one, but he's worked in England some. I've never seen Trevor in Mexico. I haven't seen Trevor in Japan. Like, Daniel Bryan actually did all of that and went to all of those countries and got immersed in the style. And I think that Trevor, while he does a really good job of kind of doing a facsimile of the Daniel Bryan thing, I think that it would probably behoove him to actually get around the world and
do... You think he likes to travel? Because I think he hates to travel.
He seems to hate traveling, and that's going to be, I think, the thing that's going to make him... As much as I love him and as much as I think that he's got the raw talent and ability, I think he'll never actually become what I think he could be, which is like a worker who is at the level of peak Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson, is that he's not going to put in that effort to go and actually immerse himself in the different styles to get better. I mean, I understand you can like do a facsimile of it by studying and watching tapes and training, but I don't think that you can ever really immerse yourself in the style without going there and actually like learning the style that well. So this was fantastic. I loved this match. It had some stuff that like made me reignite my passionate love affair with Trevor Lee, but it also had some stuff that made me then question, like, will Trevor Lee ever hit that maximum peak that I think he can? And again, like, I thought 2016 Trevor Lee was the best wrestler on the planet Earth.
Yeah.
Right? So to say, like, I think that he hasn't reached his peak potential is saying a lot. But yeah, I think that it's really interesting for me to like to have a match that both showed me like, oh, this is why I thought that he was that great, and also this is why I think that he may never actually hit the peak of how great he could truly be.
Cool. Yeah, I can totally understand that. I liked the match too. I liked Dollars' promo. I did enjoy that. I like Dollars getting on the bike to avoid Trevor early on. And, you know, live, and you can definitely tell in here, Dollars is a big guy. The thing that stood out to me when I saw him live at the Rumble was he threw a hell of a big boot, and he did one here and almost knocked Trevor's face off. I loved it. You see Trevor working the arm. I like Donnie, how he used the ref to get the advantage. So I like Donnie Dollars being a chicken shit and outsmarting Trevor. The ball shot stops Trevor dead. You know, this is... I thought Dollars' heat was pretty solid. Trevor's comeback, and he gets the arm. Donnie, that boot again that Donnie threw was great. Overall, good solid stuff. I mean, I'd probably give it in the 3 and 3 1/4 star range. It was interesting. It was fun to see Trevor work a match that didn't have to go 30 or 40 minutes. So I thought we deserve some of these little fun little Trevor moments, and that's the way I thought we got here. Overall, man, I thought it was a fun show, man. Seems like they're gearing up for Kernodal Cup. It still seems, although with the booking, it's interesting because I know they got to gear up for Kernodal, and I'm liking the Kane and Ethan. I don't want to see them 6 months down the road still teaming up because I think they have other business to do down the road. But for Kernodal, I'm liking that. I'm liking wondering who Biggs' partner is going to be. Will it be Mecca? Will they make a big announcement and then boom, he shows up? Who knows? But I'm liking a lot of the pairings, and I'm liking what they're doing, but I want to see some more traction going forward on some of these guys, because a lot of them feel like we're, kind of like spinning their wheels. I want to see Kane get something to chew on. It seems like, the angles that are really going on right now are the All-Stars, Trevor Lee, and the owner with McAllister and Nick Richards for the most part. Everything else is kind of nothing to sink their teeth into. Anything you want to add to the show?
No, I mean, I liked the post match stuff with Skyler. I actually thought that was.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was great. Good angle at the end to go forward.
And the post-match or the post-show promo with Skyler talking about taking his move and taking his spot and taking his title, I really, really enjoyed, which I was already making comparisons earlier with Skyler's match and his kind of ring presence to Trevor. So then him doing even like this kind of mirror angle where he's trying to essentially replace Trevor is kind of perfect, honestly. I really, really enjoyed that. I agree with you. A lot of stuff feels like it's in kind of stasis. A lot of stuff is in like a stopgap mode where they're just trying to kind of get through it. We'll see with Kernodal Cup. I'm excited for 12 teams in the Kernodal Cup. You know,
it feels like all we're getting are like a main event and semi-main angles, you know?
Right. It feels like we're missing
nothing underneath. It's like, okay, hey, we'll do something. Hey, we'll throw you into this at the last minute. See, it doesn't seem like they have a straight focus for the undercard.
Well, I mean, yeah, like some of it feels like a facade of even booking in general. It's just like stuff that's not fleshed out as well as it could be. Trevor right now seems rudderless, but we'll see. I mean, like, again, they're focusing going into Kernodal Cup. I liked your point about having this kind of title match with Donnie Dollars that wasn't as big. Because we do deserve to have like kind of a mix of different match styles with Trevor, because I think Trevor deserves to get to show off what he can do, which is something that I thought was really why he was a shining star in 2016, is he got a really nice variety of matches to show off what his talent was like, even in CWF. While, you know, 2017, I felt like a lot of the stuff that he was doing was a lot of the same over and over, like repetitive. So, yeah, like, I enjoy that, but I do think that, like, he seems like he has no purpose right now. I mean, I know that his big angle just finished, but still, it feels like the Chapel Hill right here was, like, a bit of a stopgap leading into Kernodal Cup for a lot of the angles going on. So, we'll see. I mean, I think that the stuff with Cross and Redemption should be feeling hotter And that should be the big angle that you care about going into Canoodle Cup. But I feel, again, I feel like that's the one I say felt more of like a facade of an angle and doesn't really have the meat there that I'm getting super invested in to carry the tournament. And I think that that's their problem is I can't think of like more than four teams that are going to be in the 12 teams that are in the Canoodle Cup. So a lot of it feels like it's just going to be people who are there. Like people, I like the idea of having cool teams brought in from outside, but
yeah.
I felt like last Canoodle Cup you had more meat on the bone for all the teams that were in the tournament. And this one, it feels like a lot of them are going to feel kind of like they're just stuck there. And the big angle that should be carrying the tournament doesn't feel big enough for me.
Okay, fair enough. On that note, why don't we take a break, and then we'll talk NWL and NXT next.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacetoBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacetoBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacetoBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back, and we're going to look at NWL episode number 62 first. And it opens up with Matt Jackson, and he's with some girl, and the manager, I think it's Oscar Wilde, I think it is. I don't know. But they have a little deal where they want Maverick to be part of Jackson's crew, and Wilde will be with them. So they're setting up a little backdrop there. Maverick has kind of dismissed Jackson in previous weeks, so it sounds like it's all coming to a head this week. Then we got, what you make of the segment? I mean, I thought it was fine, and I thought it foreshadowed stuff to come in the episode.
Yeah, I like the Jackson administration. I like that being called that. It works for me just because of the former president, Jackson. And I didn't know. Is her name Oscar Wilde? Because I kind of like that too, as stupid as it is.
I know it's Wilde, but I thought it might be Oscar Wilde. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think this is fine. I didn't have – maybe I'm just missing stuff repeatedly in NWL, but I didn't have the backstory of Maverick being dismissive towards the Jackson administration to me. So it felt like some of the stuff on this episode was a little bit rushed. But if there was like some backstory to it, then maybe I just missed on it. Like maybe
I think it was like the week or 2 weeks ago, Maverick, Jackson was sucking up to Maverick, and Maverick just walked by him.
Okay. Oh, you know what? Yeah, I do remember that actually. I didn't think much of it actually. So maybe
Subtle. It wasn't like beat you over the head with it type of thing. And the announcers, and it's different of how they set up their TV. So the announcers aren't talking over the segments, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
That leaves us to Maverick versus Mike Outlaw. Outlaw really impressed me as a good bump taker. looked athletic, looked like a fun worker. But this is all about Maverick winning, and I give it 2.25. But I think Outlaw really came away impressing me. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I thought that Outlaw looked good. I thought Maverick looked very solid. Yeah, I would like to see more of Outlaw, actually. He seemed like a more... This is a weird one to say, but he seemed like a slightly more credible kind of a Sugar Dunkerton, honestly. Like, he's got some charisma, but his wrestling was a little bit more serious and better.
His bumping was really good, too.
Yeah, for sure.
And then we have Matt Jackson comes out and wants Maverick to sign, and Maverick looks pissed off, but then Maverick gets turned on, and it looks like Thor Thoreau comes out, chases everybody off, but no, he then turns on Maverick, and Thor Thoreau signs with Wild and the Jackson administration. So that was a lot of stuff going on. I'm not sure how I feel about it. It feels like it was a little convoluted and kind of like a swerve for a holy shit moment type of thing, as opposed to natural progressive of story. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, it felt like they rushed. This is, I mean, so like I said, for me, because I wasn't familiar with the background with Maverick.
It didn't feel like they were teasing a Thor heel turn.
Yeah, so it felt like, for me, because I had both of it, it felt like the angle itself was like insanely rushed, because it was just, all of this was happening way too fast, because I didn't have the background of thinking of Maverick like being anti-Jackson administration. So with that, plus Thor turning out of nowhere, I mean, Thor having a relationship to Maverick, showing up, and then turning on him, was just, all of it was too much, too fast for me in that regard. So, yeah.
Muddled. Definitely muddied waters on this angle.
I like what we're getting out of it with Thor heel with the Jackson administration, because I like Thor, and I think that he has some depth to his character that'll make this work, but it did feel like it was very rushed.
Yeah, and I think Thor needs to be a heel, and I think he needs a heel presence with him. So we'll see how that works out for him. Then that leads us to the Besties in the World versus the Howletts. I thought this was the now that Besties have the belts after that hellacious street fight. this was, I thought, the best match on the show. I thought it was a fun shine by the Besties early on, and the Besties working the arm. Love the way Davey Vega incorporates the crowd. I like the double team sets up the heat. Solid heat segment using their size. Hot tag to Vega. Double team cuts him off. It was a little too long, but I liked how the bad back played into the finish. I give it 3.25, but I thought it was good stuff. What about you, man?
Yeah, good back and forth. stood out as why the Besties are a good tag team to have as your champions, because they're able to have these very solid matches with really any team. The Howletts are actually very good. I like both of them. I have liked both of them in singles matches quite a bit. And so here in the tag team, when they talked about how they haven't been tagging very much recently, was interesting. Is like they can come back together though and still be a top level tag team and even deserve a shot. But yeah, the Besties they're really good as a top level tag team, honestly, and they're great guys to have your tag belts on in general for a company who wants to have a division that has a tag division that's like hot and credible.
Yeah, I mean they're like modern day Rock and Roll Express in a way.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, yeah, for sure.
Then we get Ace Steel versus Jet Royal. I absolutely hated this match. I thought the thing dragged and dragged. It was totally ground-based. Thank God Michael Strider attacks post-match. But then it's Jax Royal makes a save. I guess it's his twin brother, who he ends up cutting an emotional promo. But my God, I want to get out of here, because this thing was, I thought, as boring as it gets. One of my least favorite this match went 20-something minutes, and I'm teetering in the dud range. I couldn't get into it at all. What about you?
Agreed for the most part. I could see what they were trying to do, but it didn't have any of the oomph for what they were trying to do, which is that they were trying to show that Royal could counter Ace Steel's mat proficiency. And he isn't just a high flyer who only can like kind of live and die with what he can do in that regard. So it was weak. It was very weak. I don't think that Ace Steel, for all of the credit that you want to give him as a trainer, is like a maestro level worker who can have a match with a high flyer that stays on the mat, that makes the high flyer look like a great wrestling, like a great grappler. He can't do the, you know, the William Regal, just hold on and I'll make you look good kind of thing with the grappling. So yeah, it kind of didn't get it didn't get me connected to it at all. And so you're trying to, you're limiting Royal doing what he does best. They should have kept it simple and let Royal just kind of fly and sell, and then that may have worked. Once he did start kind of hitting some of his high-flying offense, I thought that the match picked up in a good way for Royal to show off some high-flying, but that was very short-lived as you then cut it off and then go into the angle. And then it does make me question, why did I waste my time kind of you're trying to get me invested in this grappling story to then kind of throw it away to go into this bigger angle that honestly is a big and emotional enough angle that you could have gotten to it a lot quicker and not wasted my time with this fucking phony match that you're doing that doesn't have any kind of anything behind it and doesn't get me invested. If you just wanted to build up to his brother returning, you could have got to it a lot quicker, and then I wouldn't have had like the kind of bad taste in my mouth from the fake grappling display that wasn't very good.
Yep. Overall, it's hard to say, man. I enjoyed the angles and this. But, I mean, thank God for the besties match. But other than that, man, I thought it was a... I didn't care for that final. And the opener was okay, but, man, that last match just... It made me... Maybe if this show was on different order, I think we would have enjoyed... I would have had a better aesthetic feeling for it. Well, what about you, man? Anything you want to add to it?
Yeah, I guess the final add to point would be that, like, there is a big, huge drop-off between episodes of NWO that do and don't have Jeremy Wyatt on them.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, the most important thing to point out here.
Yep, he's a glue, for sure. Let's move over to NXT. And, like we were teasing, Regal announces the North American Championship. And, man, EC3 comes out, and the dude has star charisma right off the bat. I wonder what Nova Pro thinks about his 1% gimmick. But his music theme used... what now?
No, I was just laughing. Yeah, because I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. His theme music kicks ass. And it's awesome. And Regal announces that the North American belt will be in a ladder match. And right now, EC3 comes across as a big impact player and gets over huge in the one little promo he had, and he looked like $1 million. What you make of it?
Well, you skipped over the requisite. We have to kvetch and moan about how, the stuff with Ciampa and setting up the match with Johnny Gargano.
Oh, I missed that part. I started the show maybe like 4 minutes after the start.
Okay, well, every podcast...
So the credits were rolling when I was watching
gotcha.
It.
Gotcha. Every podcast in the world is complaining about the fact that it makes no sense that they're having an unsanctioned match that also has a really fired get your job back stipulation. So there is the requisite that we have to complain about that because wrestling is real, and we're very upset that Regal set up a match that doesn't make perfect sense in the context of that paradigm of how wrestling works.
Oh, I think that's fair because
it's fair.
NXT really. I mean, they are pretty logical for the most part. And,
yeah. No, it's definitely a fair critique. It's just, it's fucked out at this point because everyone's saying the exact same thing repeatedly.
Yeah. I mean, part of the problem is they wanted that first takeover to be the classic match, and they got it. And I also think Ciampa's leg wasn't ready for a big-time run-in. And so they had to do the other one where they had to do some stiff or something. And they kind of booked themselves into a corner, honestly. Because then they booked the finish, which should have been over on TakeOver. And so to get to where they're going. And, yeah, I think they have a I think they booked themselves into a corner, and it's not the they didn't book themselves into the, into a corner that they can easily get out of without, you know, without making any sense.
Yeah, exactly. But the promo with EC3, I don't know, maybe tonight is my night to just be the fucking kind of the contrarian or something, but I understand that everyone really, really, really is into this, but I don't like the music. I didn't think that
his promo... I loved it. Oh, yeah.
I didn't think that his promo comes across charismatic. He came across a bit mantic to me. I have to say, like, I can't shit on it because I know it's working. It's over. People like him. People are into him. That's what matters. But it's just not hitting me properly. So that's, like, that's the thing with this. And hopefully it continues, and I like it. Because I was into EC3 in TNA. I actually thought he was very good there for a while when I was paying attention to TNA. But I just, so far, I'm just not into it in NXT.
Okay. Then we get to the control center, which I kind of dig. But I don't think we need multiple control center segments, which is what we got. That leads us into a TM61 interview, which I love how they blow them off because we have some business is picking up, and Shayna Baszler and Ember Moon are fighting in the back. I was wondering what was going on and stuff. Which was exactly what the point was. So I thought they laid out this angle really well, and the angle is a great payoff to these two fighting. What you make of that, man?
Yeah, I loved this. I thought it felt natural for like the way that they went from one thing to the next. I liked quite a bit. It didn't necessarily help TM61 look really good.
Yeah.
But
they totally came across as the afterthought.
Yeah, but the
do you think they're gonna end up breaking up?
No, I hope not, because I don't think either guy really has a big time shine as a singles. Honestly,
because it reminded me of Murph Buddy of Blake and Murphy at this point.
Right, they are getting
a more athletic offensive base. Well,
what
Blake
sucks
and Murphy were more defensively bumping teams.
What sucks is they're like Blake and Murphy without having that like run where they were very good and they were the tag team champions and they were this great act. They're like Blake and Murphy without any of the positives, which is
yeah
not necessarily good. If they break them up, I think that people will get into Haste, but like I don't think that Haste is good enough to carry like a team by himself or like a singles run very well, honestly. So I hope they don't break them up, but they might. Then when they transition to the stuff with Moon and Shayna, I thought that was great. And I love that. I love the cameraman getting caught up in the kerfuffle and taken down and beat up. I thought that was really cool in the segment. And again, I like NXT doing weird stuff. But you mentioned the too many of the Dusty Classic kind of command center. But that was not the thing that I felt like they went back to way too much here. But I thought they went back to repeatedly way too many times with Kathy Kelly trying to get the people that are going to be in the ladder match from Regal. I felt like for a show that's only an hour long, you can't continuously go back to something that much. She really started to feel like a pest. And like also there was stuff where it didn't make any fucking sense. Like I get what you're trying to do. And I get that, like, a story kind of arc like that works on a 3-hour show like Raw. But on a 1-hour show here in NXT, the setting, like, it just feels fucking weird. It feels like too forced, too put upon.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And that leads us to the Authors of Pain versus the Street Profits. And I'm just happy because this is about basically a squash. With the Authors of Pain going over, I hope that's a message going forward. Like, learn to do some other stuff, Street Profits, because you suck. What'd you make of this, man?
I loved it, too. I was so into it. I loved Paul Ellering talking and saying, you don't want to do this. You don't want to mess with me. As he's just, his partner's getting fucking demolished in the ring. Liked it very much. I agree with you. I thought this worked really well. I thought they did a good job. As we're going to have the two semifinals in one show, they did a really good job of giving you this that was, in a lot of ways, you could feel shortchanged. because the semifinal match was so quick.
Yep.
But you did not, because they made a storyline that made sense.
Exactly. Then we go back to the control center again. And this time, Kathy Kelly interviews Regal. And Adam Cole will be in the North American bout. Velveteen Dream interrupts, and Velveteen Dream is in as well. So we're filling up and getting ready. Then we get a Lars Sullivan versus Tom, Chavo versus John Silver, where he tosses Silver around, squash. And Lars Sullivan is in, and I love it, and it's forming. What you make of everything here?
Yeah, the raw dog gets just completely fucking treated like a piece of raw hide for Lars Sullivan to chew on here, as he just completely destroys him. I thought it was good. I like Lars Sullivan quite a bit, actually, but we talked about it. I mean, the guy is big, and he's got that crazy, or he was wearing that crazy knee brace, which now appears to be gone, so hopefully when he took that time off, it was to get some knee surgery, so that's all fixed up, hopefully completely fixed up at this point, because he decides that he needs to now add on doing a flying headbutt, a move that Harley Race has openly said he wishes he had never popularized in North American wrestling, a move that was done pretty famously by two wrestlers who have, one of which I think is still technically alive, who have had some very, very negative late in life situations. And another one, actually a third wrestler who's just barely coming back from being told that he's not allowed to wrestle because of too many concussions. So on top of having bad knees, you probably don't need to also add in doing a flying headbutt, but you know, whatever, Lars Sullivan, you'll figure it out. The guy is like money just being on the mat. He doesn't need to do any high flying stuff. He's actually a really good promo. He's great as just being a freak of fucking nature. Like, yeah. So I thought he was good here, but I could do without the flying headbutt. From there, we get into the promo backstage with William Regal adding him to the North American title ladder match, where he also calls out that he not only wants to get to do some destruction with the ladder, but he also wants to get his hands on Killian Dane. I really like this a lot, especially with Regal. Regal's acting here was really good, as he said, like, oh, we're on the same page. And you could tell, like, the wheels were rolling, the hamster was spinning in Regal's brain as he put it together. And he was like, you know what? Killian Dane is in the ladder match, so you get his hands on him at TakeOver. Yep. But why don't you guys have a match next week, too? And I really like that a lot.
Yep. And then we get Kathy Kelly again. She's with Regal again. And Lars Sullivan, we announced he's in the North American match. And Killian Dane is also in, like you just mentioned. And then we get Lars versus Killian Dane next week. So I like how they set up a match for next week. And then Dakota Kai comes out, but we got to shoot to the back, and Almas is kicking the living crap out of Aleister Black. Interesting angle where they show Black having to get his ass kicked, which I was surprised to see. What you make of it, man?
I liked it. I liked Black being actually kind of weak for once. This is a good way to have Black show ass for one of the first times. And one thing I'll question is Dakota Kai, man, Big DK, she is, like, constantly in the mix as, like, an afterthought person. She's always, like, she's there for Shayna to come attack. She's in a match that gets, like, she's in a jobber match that gets, like, interrupted by whatever. She's coming out to the ring, and then this happened. Like, it's so funny the way that they do this, where certain people seem to constantly get caught up as, like, the people who get overshadowed by other things going on.
Yep. And then we got Sanity versus Dunn and Strong. I really liked how Dunn kept on focusing on Young's arm throughout, and he kept on coming back to it. I thought overall it was a fun match. What about you?
I thought that they did a really good job up until the first break. Again, I talked about it with Trevor and Donnie Dollars, but they did another one here where it started to feel like it was an inevitability. Before we got to the first commercial, I felt like, oh yeah, Sanity of course is going to win. They're going to put these guys away, and just like, you know, because they're the real tag team, and the other team is just like thrown together guys. And the offense that they were doing was really good, and they were really dominant. And then we come back from break, and that's where they come back with, you know, Pete Dunne and Eric Young were insanely great together, which is not something I would have expected. Their kind of mix of styles worked well, with Eric Young really putting over like a lot of big kind of drama points. Eric Young did a really good job of reining Pete Dunne in, honestly, which Pete Dunne is not Matt Riddle, right? He's not a guy who like needs to be reined in, but at the same time, like, he does better when he does have someone who can rein him in pretty solidly. And I thought that Eric Young did a great job of that here. And then having Roddy and Thatcher go at it with each other was perfect, because Roddy is like the best underdog, like kind of bulldog. Like, he's not an underdog babyface, but he's like an underdog. Like, he goes toe to toe with guys bigger than him, and you buy into it. Like, he sells enough, but he's also like super dominant, and he's just really good in that setting. So him and Thatcher, what do they call him? Alexander Wolfe, looked really good together. I liked Nigel calling him the Axeman, because it makes no fucking sense if you don't know that he's called the Axeman, because his name is Axel Thatcher in WXW, and like that's why they called him the Axeman, for Axel. And my only gripe with this match, I think I've been hearing people like actually give this praise, like match of the year contender match, as like a really, really fucking great tag team match. My only complaint with the match was that the double team finish came across a little sloppy, because I think it was supposed to be like a back body, like a backdrop driver into the bitter end from Pete Dunne. And I think it didn't look as perfect as it could have.
Right.
But that said, I mean, the match was great. I hope if they want that to be like their thing, that they can make it work as their finish, because they got one more big match, and we'll see. But I love this setup when you have the winners of the last Dusty Classic in AOP, the dominant tag team, the guys who were on the same fucking page, who tonight won their match with the help of their manager, because there's this well-oiled unit who has like three people working together all on the same page, against this thrown together tag team of two undersized guys who are like fucking tenacious, phenomenal fighters, one of which is like the worst heel on the planet, one of which is like the modern day fucking Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, together to face off against like this well-oiled machine of two big ass monsters. Like, I love this setup as the final so much. So, I'm really excited to see where they go from this.
Yeah, and then we get Kathy Kelly in the back with Regal. We knew what we were getting. We got Ricochet. Sometimes you could tell he was a dork growing up, and he got into shape, and now girls dig him. But he's got to be a moment. I don't know. Ricochet almost feels like he's like a rock knockoff. So I think he needs to find his own voice to be successful here on the WWE. But he got a good reaction for his debut, I guess. What'd you make of it?
I can definitely see what you're saying about that. I'm going to give big props to my girl Kath Kelly here, because when Ricochet came out, and like you said, he is very awkward. He's got like an interesting mix. I honestly am just going to say one thing that I heard Chuck Taylor say on commentary in PWG once, that kind of always fits Ricochet in a lot of these kind of situations. Ricochet was once dancing in the ring, and Chuck Taylor on commentary said, "That's the white half." is that there's sometimes when you see Ricochet where he's just so uncool that you're like, oh yeah, that's the white half of Ricochet coming through. Kath Kelly did a great job of coming across like she was like befuddled by this super smooth, like attractive, awesome, great guy who just popped out of William Regal's office in a suit. But the thing about Ricochet is that, like, yeah, the stuff backstage and the promos can come across a little awkward because he's like a total nerd. The thing is, once he's in ring, he is just that slick. That's like the only problem with the guy, is that his persona on the mic, his persona outside of the ring, doesn't come across the same slickness as the guy in the ring, because the guy in the ring comes across as cool and slick as anyone on the fucking planet. So if somehow they can train him to match those things up, essentially he could be the top wrestler in the whole fucking planet. Until we get there, he is going to have an amazing ladder match WrestleMania weekend against the other five guys that are in this match. I liked this segment. I thought it was a good use of Ricochet here to get him over, but again, I'm with you that, like, I'm a little trepidatious on his backstage stuff, but the match itself is going to be fucking crazy.
Yep, I can't wait for it. Overall, I thought they built it, and I think the thing I'm most excited for is the Shayna Ember Moonstone. I think they've built that thing up to a fever pitch, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely with you on that. I think that match is going to be insane. I think that hopefully Shayna can bring some big time stuff there and, like, actually really stand out. I think that even though I love the grappling stuff that Shayna does, I think that she needs to be able to turn it up on the big stage and have something else. Even if it's just bumping and feeding for Ember to do some big spots, I think they need to add something to that match to make it really stand out. But the ladder match I think is going to be great. And I think it sucks that we're not getting the Dusty Rhodes final on the paper or on TakeOver, but we're getting the match between the winners and the tag team champions on the pay-per-view, which I think kind of, not to say that it's bad, but it's kind of, I don't know, it doesn't deliver the same excitement as for me as it would if it was the tag team tournament finals on the pay-per-view.
Hey man, on that note, why don't we take a break? And then we'll come back and we'll talk some New Japan Strong Style Evolution.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back. We're looking at Strong Style Evolution. You know, I heard a lot of people hated the Jim Ross commentary. It didn't drive me up a wall as much as it did, I guess, a lot of people. What were your takes on it?
I thought Jim Ross was fine here. In fact, I thought he was good at times. I always liked Josh Barnett. I like Josh Barnett in pretty much any setting. I don't see why you would have any issue with this, honestly.
Fair enough. And then we open up with SoCal Uncensored, which is Daniel Kazarian and Scorpio Sky versus Roppongi Vice 3000K. I gave this match about 3 stars, maybe 2 or 3 fourths. It started slow, started to pick up. Never would have pinned Scorpio Sky out of his group. I would have protected him, but that's besides the point. It was just kind of there, and they didn't really exactly hit their style. There was a lot of brawling, some high spots, but overall, I thought it did its purpose, which was open the show. What about you?
I give it 2.25, and I'm kind of with you on pretty much everything you said there, except for, like, I did find it interesting because this felt more like an American opener than a Japanese or a New Japan opener, which is, I mean, obviously that makes sense because they're in America, but normally New Japan, their opening matches are opening matches with young boys and squashes, not squashes, but kind of feel like nothing, and this felt like more spots, more trying to get the crowd pumped for a big show. So I thought that they served a good job doing that. Like I said, I gave it 2.25. I'm with you. I think that they probably shouldn't have pinned Scorpio Sky, honestly. Just because, I mean, you got Kazarian right there. No one... I like Kazarian, but a lot of people don't give a shit about Kazarian, so why not just fucking pin him if you're going to pin anybody? And Scorpio Sky is a guy as a singles who I think is better. I guess I've also heard people not like Scorpio, which I think is fucking stupid, but whatever. I shouldn't continue talking about a match that I gave 2.25 to, though, at this point, because, you know, it wasn't that good. So, yeah.
And that leads us to Juice Robinson and David Finlay versus Goto and Gato. What'd you make of this one?
This one I really enjoyed, actually. I gave it 2.75. I thought Juice looked really good. I thought Goto was, like, very... Like, at this point, Juice just feels, like, completely seamlessly integrated into the company. I loved Gato working over the eye pokes with Juice. Juice going back and forth with him. The crowd was into it a lot. David Finlay is still a great hot tag. He gets fired up really well and looks good whenever he does that. Matches in and out pretty quickly. Gaijin getting the wins. Like I said, these guys feel pretty solidly cemented into New Japan in a way that's, like, impressive for Gaijin, who are on the undercard, you know. David Finlay gets
right
with the stunner, which is not something you'd expect, you know. Just, like, two, like, non-Japanese who can be kind of in that upper mid to mid-card area, but are, like, getting random wins over Japanese talent and are treated somewhat important without being, like, only the top star. Because for a long time in Japan, that was it. Like, you were either from Japan or you were, like, a top-level star or you just didn't get booked. So it's interesting to see guys who are able to work in, like, in a kind of a middle place.
Yeah, I give it 2.5. My favorite part was the Gato and Juice punch exchange. I thought that was really well done. That leads us to Killer Elite Squad versus Yano and Chucky T. And I'm not a Yano guy, but, man, I thought this was one of the better matches. I gave it 2.75. I like the Killer Elite Squad doing what they do, which is them scaring the living pants out of people. And overall, good stuff. What you make of it?
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought the Killer Elite Squad served their role very well. I thought Chuck Taylor was awesome here. He's getting worked over, getting thrown around, selling for the two twin giants really well. And then I loved, you know, Yano getting, like you said, I thought Yano was really good here because he got, like, a really nice, if you had this as, like, a Southern tag setup, he worked, like, the babyface hot tag, but it was all comedy spots that the crowd was super into. So I kind of really enjoyed seeing that version of this done. Love Chuck working hard to get the pile driver, eventually gets it. Chuck does a lot of really basic offense, but the crowd is into him super hard. So it just goes to show, we talked about it earlier with the shit in WrestleMania weekend with the stuff being limited based on the commission. But realistically, Chuck is able to work, like, super simple ass stuff, but get the crowd behind it. So, I mean, when it comes down to it, like, I mean, maybe Chuck Taylor is a better worker than Will Ospreay. I don't know. Maybe that's crazy, but maybe he is. I don't know.
That leads us to Cody Rhodes and Marty Scurll. Versus the Gorilla Destiny, and I liked Cody on the mic here. Love the shooting. The shooting from Cody and Scurll early on. Interference by Brandy sets up the heat. It was a bit over the top here. Love the push up spot by Cody. Like Cody being a shiny hog, being a glory hog, which fits his character pretty well. I give it 2.5. Well, what'd you make of it, man?
I also gave it 2.5. I am with you. I liked the beginning. I liked the end. There was some nice stuff sprinkled in throughout, but realistically, there is not much to this match that we have to break down, you know? Like, I mean, realistically, that's all that this was. It was a good opener. It was a good opening. There was some cool stuff on the finish, and there was some stuff in the middle that you could definitely enjoy. It served its purpose very well. I think that if you don't think that Cody Rhodes is very, very deserving of the spot that he has throughout all of wrestling, you are fairly mistaken. You are sorely mistaken, because Cody Rhodes is fantastic, and he showed it here as a heel, being able to work with Scroll to use what's over about Scroll to make himself more of a heel. So, if you don't get that, then you kind of don't get wrestling, or you just get wrestling in a totally different way than I do, and I guess that's fine, but we just probably can't talk about it because it's like it's two different things. It would be like if we're talking about, I guess, like, I don't know, football and basketball or something. We just can't be on the same plane of a conversation if you don't understand why Cody is like one of the best heels in wrestling right now.
Right. What'd you make of Naito, Sonata, Bushi, and Takahashi versus Tanahashi, Kushida, Taguchi, and Dragon Lee?
What I made of this is that I am fucking insanely impressed by the fact that after years of dropping each other on their heads and doing all of these crazy spots, Dragon Lee and Hiromu are able to have the most over spot in the world by just slapping each other in the face a bunch. It just goes to show, again, we talked about the emotion and being able to work with as little as possible, that with the backstory and the heat and the fire and everything that was involved, that's all you need to get a crowd, this huge fucking crowd, if you're being honest. Like, realistically, this crowd makes the crowd that was at PWG look like a fucking joke. This crowd is gigantic, and they fucking loved two guys smacking each other more than they liked flips and flops and every other thing that you could do. So, again, it just goes to show that with emotion and with fire, you can get more over than you can with pile drivers and blade jobs. I gave the match 3 stars literally just for the fact that all the guys in it just hit their spots. It was like a star. It was just like a match about, like, see the stars of New Japan. And the crowd loved it and bought every minute of it, ate it up, because, you know, Los Ingobernables are the best, probably the best unit in wrestling. They are also just perfectly matched with each other, and everything that they did was fantastic. It came across like stars. Everyone got in and hit their spots, and that was all that really mattered in the match, really.
Yep, and then that leads us into, who's up next?
Osprey versus Jushin
Liger. That's right. What were your thoughts here?
It was really crazy, because at this point, it's like you're only like maybe an hour in, and you're like, you know that it's like a 4-hour show, and they just blew through the undercard. Osprey is fantastic at doing this, selling the knee while still hitting all of his spot stuff. We talked earlier about how Osprey sucks and how he's an asshole and he's shitty, but he was really good in this match for that. He gets hit with a super rana, but he flips out onto his feet, but tweaks his knee, and then spends the rest of his match essentially like doing all of his spots with one leg so that he can sell his knee, which is very impressive. I have to give him a lot of credit for figuring out a way to do all of his cool ass flips and stuff with one leg, and he does.
Well, I'm with you. Early on, I thought that was impressive, but it felt like he kind of shit canned it down the stretch.
He did definitely lose it halfway through, and that's what kept this match from being like phenomenal. But yeah, like, it's really impressive that this guy has figured out how to do. He can do most of his signature spots on one leg, which is really, really impressive. If he could just focus and keep with it, he could have, like, all-time great-level matches. That said, I give the match, you know, 3 stars, because, like you said, he kind of wastes what's a really good match halfway through. But this felt too quick. Am I crazy to think that this felt way too quick? Like, this match...
It felt rushed, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like they could have slowed this down and given it more time, especially because, like I said, the show goes 4 hours, and at this point, we're like not even an hour and a half in when they start. I feel like they really could have given this match more time.
Fair enough. I give it 3.25. Pretty much what we probably discussed it all there. So, but yeah, I enjoyed it and needed. But yeah, the shit canning of the leg bothered me down the stretch. And that leads us to Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. versus Okada and Ishii. What were your thoughts here?
I thought that Sabre showed off what you have to expect for the title match really well here. By having counters for all of Okada's big moves that he could transition into submission holds that looked believable. I thought that that was such a cool little wrinkle that he did here. I really, really loved Suzuki tagging out to Zack Sabre Jr. and he just says, kill him. And he points at Ishii, just telling, like, who's selling in the corner like he's dead already. Which I just think is great. Like, Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. are so fucking great together. Like, they play off each other so well. Where Zack is his apprentice prick who just comes across so fucking evil. Like, he's the young master to the evil wizard of Suzuki, who is comes across like the most evil man on the planet. Which is, they're just so good together. When I hear, and I've already called him out once earlier for battling scarecrows on podcasts, but Joe Lanza, I heard at some point like questioning the idea of like why Zack Sabre Jr. would be in Suzuki-gun, and I'm like, have you not seen them as a tag team? Because they're tag team champions in Rev Pro, and they've been doing this for a while. Where Suzuki and Sabre together are like the perfect fucking tag team. It's the veteran with the young buck who he's like his apprentice, and they're so good together. Like, how can you question why Zack Sabre Jr. would be in Suzuki-gun? He's fucking perfect with this guy. Pretty much everything throughout was great. I love the finish with Ishii as the ref stoppage. Ishii won't tap out, but Zack Sabre Jr. is just punished into the point where he's not going to be able to respond. That said, I give the match 3.25 star. Really liked the action. Like I said, really, this match really helped to build for the Okada versus Suzuki, or for Zack Sabre Jr. title match. And I think that this is the crowd to get bought into it. Getting the American crowd bought into Zack Sabre Jr. with Okada is actually the best way that they could do it. Cause I think that with the New Japan Cup, they did a really good job of getting probably the Japanese crowd bought into it. But I think that getting the American crowd bought into it too will help make that match even better when it comes down to it.
Yeah, you're 3.25, and I'm with you. I still felt like they protected Okada even in a loss a little bit here, where it wasn't him doing the tap out and stuff. So that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Okada does not lose at this point. Okada does not drop losses really to anyone except for in G1. Like, he never loses otherwise.
Right. And that leads us to JY versus Hangman Page. And man, I felt, speaking of giving people too much time, I thought they went way too long for what they are. I think they end up going 30 plus minutes. The crowd just wasn't into him. They didn't view Hangman Page as a star. Finally, he works hard enough where they recognize him, but they're not putting him over or saving him. And it didn't look like Switchblade, Jay White. He didn't look comfortable doing what he was doing. And I think overall, this was a mess going on right now.
You couldn't be more wrong. I gave this match 5 stars. Jay White is clearly the future of New Japan. He is the greatest wrestler who's ever existed. The only person who comes close is Roman Reigns, maybe. Obviously that was all a joke. This match was awkward. There was a lot of stupid shit. Adam Page found a way
people to... People seem like people just reacted to big moves.
Yeah, for sure. Adam Page found a way to have a really good match where I really was into him and I thought that he looked great.
Yeah, I thought Page was the standout in this match.
Yes, but he was able to do all of that while also doing a worse job executing Joey Ryan's old finishing move than Joey Ryan ever did. The mustache ride, which is the swinging neck breaker from the middle rope. Somehow Jay White was able to make that look shittier than Joey Ryan ever did in his illustrious career as a wrestler, which is very impressive because Joey Ryan is terrible at wrestling. We've talked about it before. So yeah, I have to give him big ups for being, while very good, also showing off that he is very bad. I did not understand why this match continued to go and go and go and go. Like you said, it was way too fucking long. There was a good match in here somewhere, but there was a lot of sloppiness. There's some stuff about Jay White that I want to like as a, like, kind of subversion of Strong Style, where he's out of position on stuff and he doesn't buy into bullshit dick measuring contests of, like, trading shots and all this. Like, there's a lot of that that I want to like. There's, like, a sleazy slip out the back door, get the win move. I talked about it before with Naito, where Naito would always, like, do counters into his move but never win on those, but always only win when he hits the clean version of his move. And, like, I like that Jay White hits, like, a shitty counter version of his move and wins, which kind of shows the opposite of him, is that he's not, like, a respectable fighter. There's, like, a lot of stuff I really, really want to like about Jay White, but for some reason, I don't like any of it. Did you give a star rating on this match? Because I gave it 2.5 stars.
I gave it 2 3/4.
Okay.
It's like, yeah, they started getting him towards the finish, but yeah, it took a long, long time for him to get the crowd.
And it, yeah, it took a very long time to get the crowd, and then even when they still got the crowd in into it, they still were not, like, very good. Like, there's, I can, like, give you some credit where I'm like, the crowd's burnt out, but you're mechanically good. Like, there was a lot of shitty sloppiness in here, honestly, and there was just, the match went too long, and it was in a bad spot, sure, but realistically, it was just not a very good match.
Yeah, and then we had the main event of the Young Bucks versus the Golden Lovers. Very decisive match. We've seen, you know, we've seen the New Japan crew 5-starring it, you know, rubber stamping it. You know, there's a lot to like about the match. The talk that's the greatest tag match of all time is that's just hyperbole. Or you haven't watched enough wrestling to be educated to know what a good wrestling match is. This had a lot of great moments. There's a lot of great work in it. I mean, I thought Matt Jackson selling in the back was tremendous in this match. But then there's a lot of over the topness and a lot of soap opera dictated action. I thought this someone they took some. I thought there's a lot of overkill. I thought some of the risks they took in this was a little overkill. I give it 4 stars, though, because there was still, it was definitely a Young Bucks match. They hit a formula of theirs that's tough to do, but you also got to look at it, man. It's a tag team match, and the ref isn't enforcing the tag team rules ever. You know, 90% of the time, it was a tornado's rules. So, you know, it's like you got to remember what it is. It's still tag wrestling, and the rules have got to apply to you just because you want to do something different. The rules still apply to you, and I would have disqualified these guys in the first 3 minutes of this match because of what was going on inside the ring if it was a shoot. But they did a lot of neat stuff, tried a lot of stuff, but I thought there were some misses in there. And the talk of it being the greatest tag match of all time, I find I'm just almost like mind blown. What you make of the match, though?
I have loved Kenny Omega for a very long time, and we've talked about it many times on this podcast. I think that Kenny Omega is able to do a really good mix of cartoony, over the top, comedy, everything all the time and make it all work. I feel like this was a situation where he completely jumped the shark. I fucking hated hearing so many people love this match to talk about it being the greatest match of all time. It hurt me inside deeply as I've like talked about how much.
Do you feel like you've like? Do you feel like you? You're like Emperor with no clothes on at times, and then you feel like you're like out of touch with reality, or
yes,
because it feels like more people say this is like a great tag match than less, but it's definitely diverse. Don't get me wrong.
It's fucking crazy. It feels like I've been saying you guys should all love Kenny Omega. He's amazing for all these years, and everyone was like, "Oh no, fuck you. He's not good. He sucks." And then finally, they're all like, "Oh yeah, actually, you're right. He's very good." And then he somehow turns terrible. And then now they're all like, "Actually, he's better than he ever was." And I'm just like, "You have to be fucking with me at this point." Like I'm not saying worse, but in this setting, the melodrama, the over the top cartoony selling, the fucking. It's just, I like wrestling. I'm sorry, but I like wrestling. And I thought that Kenny Omega always did a good job of keeping everything he did still grounded in wrestling. And this match was trying to pretend like it's like bigger than just a fucking wrestling match. The way that the story and the drama and the, oh my God, it's building off of all of this history in being the Elite. And Kota Ibushi has to grab his hand and make him do the gun sign so that he'll kick him in the, and I'm just like, this is fucking melodramatic bullshit that's not real. This is a fucking wrestling match. Just keep it in the... It feels like Kenny Omega, while trying to pretend like he's more serious to buy into the serious crowd, has actually gone the opposite way and become too much of a fucking joke. To the point where, like, now the drama is too over the top to be taken seriously in any way. Where, like, I can take the comedy seriously because it's, like, you're joking and fucking around in the context of a wrestling match, but when you're trying to pretend, like, you're seriously emotional and it's so over the top that it's ridiculous, now I can't buy into it because nobody intentionally pretends like they're so, like, torn and just ripped apart by this emotion that's creating this drama between you and your best friends. No one does that stuff for fun and in a funny way as a joke like they would do other stupid jokey things. Like, that's why jokey stuff works for me, because a normal person will do something stupid as a joke. But a normal person won't usually do something stupid as a serious, I'm hurt emotionally. And that's why this shit doesn't work for me. That said, I'm with you. I gave it 4.25 star. I thought they did a lot of really cool stuff. I thought there was a great tag team match in here with a lot of great callbacks and history and everything that was built on it. But realistically, they just kept fucking piling on the melodrama and the bullshit to a point where I just can't get into it. And it just kept taking me out. And I'm just like, God, can you guys... If these two teams had a wrestling match in 2005 or 2006, it would have been the most insane fucking crazy thing with too many spots. It would have been ridiculous. It probably would still be vaunted as one of the greatest matches of all time, historical, whatever. Like, people are trying to pretend like it is now. And it's just, it's so funny because these are not the same teams from, you know, 10 years ago when this was a dream match. These teams 10 years later had a completely different match than what you would have predicted when this match was a dream match, which is really funny to think about, because there was a point when this was a dream match. Now they finally have it, and when they finally do deliver the match, it's a completely different match that's so fucking up its own ass that it's actually ruined what's the dream match of this, which is two teams just going fucking completely insane. The stuff at the end with the back selling and the all that was good, but the almost pretending to cry and I won't give you a handshake because I'm so mad, it's just, it's too much.
Not thespians.
Yeah, it's really not. I just want wrestling to be wrestling, and I know that sounds stupid, but, you know, QT Moody, is one of my best friends on the fucking planet. He thinks that HBK is one of the best wrestlers ever. I strongly disagree, and the reason that we both love Kenny Omega, the reason that we both loved Kenny Omega for a long time, seems to be for totally opposite reasons, because I think he likes the melodrama and he likes the over the top kind of stuff, and I just can't get into it. And this match was the epitome of like my problem. This was Kenny Omega playing Shawn Michaels if Shawn Michaels was allowed to pretend like he was doing like fucking amateur Shakespeare at the community theater, and it was just turned up to 13, and it was just too much for me, and I just could not, I really could not get into it as much as I wanted to, and I want to be on the 5-star tip, and I want to say that this is the greatest tag team match of all time, but realistically, I'm sorry, but this match was like, sure, it was very good, and it was a lot of it that made me buy into it, and like I said, from the history of being obsessed with these two teams kind of facing off against each other. But realistically, there was just too much bullshit connected to this for me to ever buy into it completely as like a match of the year.
All right, Pete.
I'm
with you. We just discussed it all. Overall, I thought they did a pretty good show, though. Everything flew by. I'm a little on the Jay White character. It almost feels like they need to tinker with it, kind of like they did with the cleaner character for Kenny Omega, and make it a little bit more flow a little better. Because yeah, Switchblade isn't really working for me. So hopefully they'll rediscover that. Overall, though, I'll give it a thumbs up show. What about you?
Yeah, it's definitely a thumbs up show. Definitely a lot of really good stuff to enjoy here, but, I'm concerned with what the future holds for Kenny Omega and, Ibushi and the Young Bucks as well.
Yeah, well, Manny, anything you got to plug, brother?
No, same old. Check out the Lucha Undead podcast. Follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead. And, that's it for me.
Follow me at Titans of Wrestling, Worldcast Wednesday. If you're interested in going to the Place B Nation WrestleMania pre-party in New Orleans, hit me up on Twitter at Titans of Wrestling. And we'll be on a 2-week hiatus because I'll be in New Orleans, and then I'll probably be coming back. I'll be a little wrestled out, and then we'll be back in a couple weeks or something like that. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next time. True love.